Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hey everyone, as we're getting towards the end of the ERAS season, if you're an applicant for this year's cycle, you're probably at the point where you are finished interviews or you may have a few left, but for most of you, where your mind is heading is towards your rank list, which will open up in February and close at the end of February, and then match week is very shortly after. And I went through this process less than a year ago, so it's very fresh in my mind, the excitement around this time and also just the uncertainty and the stress, and there's just a lot of emotions going around in general. So I wanted to have this episode to talk a little bit more about rankless. And I do have an episode already out with talking about which programs to apply to for ERAS. So I don't want to fully repeat myself with that, but I think that's a good one to go back and listen to, because I talk a lot about factors that are important and factors that I wish I considered when I was going through this process. But when it comes to rank list, it's a much shorter list, so you're able to dive a little bit deeper into each program and decide really which one is the best fit. Now you have a little bit more information than just the program's website and things that you can research online. Now you actually have a personal experience with that program. You interviewed with them in person or virtually, and you met program leadership. You had conversations with the residents. So you're able to make a more definitive decision on whether or not you like this program. So what I want to start out talking about first is just the fact that your rank list really should be in your order of preference. There is no game that you can play with putting programs in a certain order to increase your chance of matching or anything. The way the algorithm works is to favor the applicant. And I just want to reiterate this. I know you've probably heard this many times, but in case you haven't, you will match at your first choice unless there are applicants that program ranked above you that would match there first. And if you're not able to match there, then it just goes down to your second choice. And if there's any spots available, then you would match there. Putting programs that you are less competitive for, putting them higher up on your rank list will not decrease your chances at matching with a program that you are competitive with lower on your rank list. Like, for example, you could have your first 10 ranks be empty and your 11th, whatever you list for 11, that could be somewhere that you would match. And that program that you have listed as 11 is basically treated as if you would rank them first. So it really just matters in what order you put programs, because you will match at whatever program you list highest that has a spot for you, essentially. And there are videos out there with the NRMP that show this a little bit more in a detailed way, but all you need to know is that you need to be putting it in order of preference. It does not matter how likely you are to match there or anything like that, or whether the program likes you or anything like that. Because if the program didn't like you, then you wouldn't match there. You would just go down to whatever the next program is. So there's not really a game you can play with thinking about how competitive you are for a program or how the program likes you. It should be in your order of preference. And programs do the same thing. They put candidates in their order of preference. However, some programs do have this thing where they like to be able to say that they didn't have to go very far down their rank list to fill their program. So some programs will play a little bit of a game to increase their metrics with this, that they will rank candidates that they think the candidates are willing to go there and are going to rank them highly. So that's how letter of interest and letter of intent comes in that it shows a program that you're serious about them, and then that program actually may be more likely to rank you higher on their list. But some programs won't care as much about this, and they will just decide applicants based off of their actual preference, which is how the system is supposed to work. But like I said, some programs care about matching high up on their rank list. And I do think to an extent some applicants, I think we're just obsessed with this idea of matching with our number one program. So some applicants, unfortunately, will rank a program number one that they are competitive for, but maybe not is not actually their first preferred program, but they just rank them number one because they want to be able to say that they matched with their number one. But I think that idea is very overrated because it only really matters on match day. No one is going to care 10 years from now that you matched with your number one program. That just does not matter. You should be ranking programs in your order of preference with where is the best fit for you and where you would want to go. And so if you were able to get an interview at a program that you thought you were not competitive for, and it's like your dream program, but you're like, well, they interviewed me, but I have a very low chance of actually matching there. That's a program that if it is your dream program and you actually want to go there, rank them first. It's only going to help you, because if what you say is actually accurate and you have a very low chance, then you'll just match at your number two or somewhere else down the list if you do drop a little bit down your list. But I don't think there should be a stigma about dropping lower in your list. I think that, you know, on match day, it can be quite a surprise if you do drop down your list. But the best thing that you can do is just put it in your order of preference so that when you do drop on your list, it's still a program that you want to go to. And another thing that I will also say is, some people get caught up in thinking about if they should rank all of the programs that they interviewed with. And what I will say for this is that you should probably rank all of the programs that you interviewed at. I know that there is an additional fee when you rank more than 20 programs. And I interviewed at, I believe it was 19 programs. I originally had 20 scheduled, but I decided that my 20th interview was not a program that I was very interested in, and I kind of knew that they would be pretty low on my list. But so I interviewed at 19 programs, but a lot of those programs had different tracks available, so they actually had several NRMP codes, and that added up to actually 26 NRMP codes for all of the programs and then the additional tracks. So I decided that I felt comfortable with putting 20 on my rank list, and I didn't want to pay the additional fees kind of out of principle, because I already spent so much money on NRMP and ERAS. So I decided to only rank 20 NRMP codes, so that meant that there was several programs that I didn't rank. I think that meant that there was 4 programs that I interviewed at that I didn't end up ranking. And the reason why I did that, this is something that I encourage you to think about. if you interview at a program and you just have really bad vibes from the program, or you think that it's just a really bad fit, and you would just be terrified if you, or maybe not terrified, but you would be very unhappy if when you open up your match envelope or you open up that email, you would be very unhappy if you matched at this program. So much so that you would be willing to go through the SOAP process to get a different program. So for me, applying to psychiatry, there was a few psychiatry programs that I would probably rather do a transitional year or a preliminary year, or even do like a family medicine program in a really great, you know, in a better location, or, you know, close to my family. Then I would rather do one of those instead of match with the psychiatry program, because I just think I'm a bad fit. And I do remember the programs that I decided not to rank. They weren't in very good locations. They weren't close to family. They weren't close to where my husband would be able to find a good job. So I decided not to rank those programs, because I thought about it, and with the programs that are typically available through the SOAP process, I'd rather do one of those programs instead of match with that psychiatry program. And that is really like the worst case scenario planning, because the vast majority of people, unless you have a lot of red flags on your application or you interview very poorly, you'll probably match in your top 10. The vast majority of people match in their top 10. And even then, almost all applicants will match in their first 15. So preparing to not match in your top 20 is really worst case scenario planning. But it's still something that you have to go through in your mind, because it can happen. So that was my thought process with that. So it was two psychiatry programs that I didn't rank. And then I had two family medicine programs that I interviewed that I ended up not ranking. And the reason why I did that was because I did dual apply. I applied for about 10 family medicine programs, just in case I was not competitive for psychiatry that year, which I ended up being very competitive for. But some things like that are pretty unpredictable. So I wanted to still apply to a handful of family medicine programs and also go through the interview process to give them a chance. And they were programs that did have a very heavy emphasis on teaching psychiatry and teaching osteopathic manipulative technique, and really encouraging some subspecialty type of work. They were programs that I was interested in case I didn't get the 20 psychiatry interviews that I was aiming for, which I was able to do pretty well. In fact, I was able to turn away some interview invites for psychiatry, but I still ended up taking two family medicine interviews, and those were done pretty early on in the season. So I actually completed those interviews before I even scheduled the 20 psychiatry interviews. So that's why those were ones that I could end up ranking. However, I decided that there was 20 NRMP codes for psychiatry programs that I preferred over these two family medicine programs. So I ended up not ranking those either. And some of this is a little bit psychological, in that I, on the Monday of match week, when I got that email that said that I matched, I wanted to know that I was going to be a psychiatrist. I think it would have prolonged the uncertainty if I didn't know which specialty I matched with for that entire week. I wanted to know on that Monday that I was going into psychiatry. So if you are dual applying, that is something to consider as well. If you feel comfortable only ranking your first choice specialty, or if you're going to rank multiple specialties that you interviewed with. So that was just something that I had to decide, which probably won't apply to most applicants, but it may apply to you if you were a dual applicant. I am now providing personalized assistance specifically to medical students. I can help with editing your CV for away rotations or other opportunities. I can aid in revisions for your personal statement, and I can help edit your ERAS application. I will catch your grammar and style mistakes and also provide feedback on content revision so you can craft documents that make you more competitive. There are so many expensive services out there that charge hundreds to thousands of dollars on reviews, which is why I'm offering a much more affordable service with different price packages based on your needs. While many services out there are led by staff members who are years to decades removed from their experience as medical students, I'm uniquely positioned to help you as someone who has been through this process recently and as someone with professional writing and editing experience. Use the link in this episode description to learn more about the services I offer for individualized help. So here are some of the factors that you should probably consider with your rank list. So when I was kind of organizing my rank list, as I was going through the interviews, I was formulating a rank list. I had an Excel document, a Google Sheets document that I interviewed at my first program. I wrote it down, and that was my, number one rank until I started interviewing at more programs, and I would add that program's name where it fit in my list. So I kind of updated the list right after I would interview with a program. So I kind of had a running rank list going based off of my initial reactions to interviews. And then I reviewed the entire list after I was done all of my interviews, and I referred to all of the notes that I took during my interviews. So I also kept track kind of similarly with a document that I had when I originally applied to programs, that I had the location of the program. I also included their NRMP ID number so that when I go into NRMP, I can confirm that I'm using the right number for each of the programs. I also included the setting of the program on this Google Doc, like if it was with an academic program, if it was affiliated with an academic institution, or if it was a community program. And then I also had some notes that I took about that could be easily compared across programs, like the salary for residents, how many days of vacation or PTO is given, what type of call system they have, if it's like short call, long call, 24-hour shifts versus night float. So I had all of these kind of metrics going. And so for this, you really have to ask yourself, what is most important to you? And, that's a really hard question, but for a lot of people, it's location, that maybe you want to be close to family. Maybe you have a preference like East Coast versus West Coast. Maybe you have a preference city versus rural. So for a lot of people, those are going to be like the major ways to differentiate between programs. For some people, they could be like me, where they want more of an academic program where you would be teaching medical students, you would be doing research, you would have exposure to subspecialties. And then within each specialty, there's going to be additional factors. Like for me, psychiatry, you also have to take into consideration, some programs have really strong psychotherapy training, such as the program that I ended up matching at. And some programs don't have as much psychotherapy training, and they may provide the bare minimum. So for every specialty, for your own specialty, you'll know what those kinds of factors are that are used to differentiate those programs. And you need to decide, what your preference is, and then you can take that into consideration when putting programs in a certain order. A lot of applicants will kind of put programs just in order of prestige. So they may just use Doximity's list of rankings for programs, or they'll use like the medical school's ranking. to put programs in order, and maybe their priority is just to match at the highest ranked program with the most prestige, which is totally fine to do. A lot of applicants will do that, especially if you do want to do an academic or a research heavy career, then it may even make sense to do that. However, I would caution you, and I did this with my previous episode too, I'd caution you because there's a lot of extra stuff to consider besides just the prestige of an institution. And a lot of times the prestige of the institution tends to correlate with the workload and the amount of stress that's put on residents. Community programs are very much associated, for the most part, associated with areas that have lower cost of living and programs that just have a little bit better work-life balance. But of course, there are exceptions to that, where there's community programs that are workhorse programs, and then there's also some diamonds in the rough with academic programs that have really good work-life balance. So you just have to take into consideration what your preferences are and what's important to you. Another thing you want to consider, and I talked about this when thinking about what programs to apply to, is the presence of fellowships at your institution. So this is especially important with internal medicine fellowships. Like if you're interested in cardiology, it really does help if your residency has an on-site cardiology fellowship, because things like cardiology and GI, they're very competitive to get into. So it helps if you are already from the get-go more competitive for at least one program just by being there in-house. And it also helps to have that kind of networking exposure because you have those subspecialists on site. As you're making your rank list, I would highly, highly, highly suggest reaching out to current residents and ask follow-up questions. Ask all the really detailed questions. So residents, you know, they're not going to tell the program director that you're asking about call shifts and that makes you seem lazy and now they're not going to rank you because you asked a resident about call shifts. That's not how it's going to work. Residents want to help you and they want to make sure that you are ranking them appropriately so that you're going to be happy there, because residents don't want to have coworkers that are miserable. So they are more than happy to answer your questions. And now I'm coming from the standpoint that I'm an intern and I would be more than happy to help applicants that are interested in my program. I, first of all, love to talk about my program because I have an amazing program. And, you know, if I hated my program and I wanted to complain about my program, I'd probably would equally want to talk to applicants about my program for the opposite reasons. So from both standpoints, you know, residents are very busy, but they will be happy to answer your questions. Another thing I'll say is some programs do something called second looks, which is basically having you come in person to see the facility, see the hospital. I think these are great. However, do not attend these if you think it's going to look good for your application, because I've never seen a program that didn't say that their second looks were blinded. So I am assuming that is true, and I'm assuming that, you know, they're not lying about that. So, you know, going to a second look isn't going to help you to get into the program, but it will help you in deciding your rank list, because if you know more about the program, you'll be able to see in person if it's a good fit for you. Especially if you're interviewing virtually, you don't know what the facilities look like. So in this day and age, I think it's important to travel and actually see the facility, and, you know, especially if you're able to get a resident or two to give you a tour. I think that is super helpful. And it's for you to learn more about the program instead of you, you know, wanting to like prove yourself. It's, you know, very low stakes, just you learning more about the program instead of trying to impress them. So I think like especially with like your top two or three programs, it's super important to try to go in person in the next month or so. And I know that's hard if your top programs are not in the same area of where you live right now, but I think it's worth even just to confirm your first choice. And as always, you should involve your loved ones in this decision, especially if you're married and if you have children. You have to keep in mind what's best for them too. Even if they say that they're super supportive of you and you can choose wherever you want to go, it's still important to think about how their lives are going to change as well. And I think, like, especially talking to your spouse or significant other, I think sometimes they can ask a lot of follow-up questions that help you to think about things a little bit more after you, like, say things out loud and you think about a response to their questions. You can start to consider things that you may have not thought about before. So I hope that this was all helpful, and I know it's just so personal, a lot of these decisions. I hope this provided some roadmap for that. View the show notes for additional information about this episode and access the link to First Line's website. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to First Line on your favorite podcast app to hear a new episode every Monday. Thanks for listening.